for Senator Volunteer Committee, during which time Mr. John Blotnick will speak in behalf of his own candidacy on a topic, a definite program for a determined people. Mr. Blotnick.
Good evening, friends. Permit me to congratulate my opponent on his radio talk last evening. Never have I heard him in a better form. The words he said sounded well. Listening, I marvel at his skillful evasion of questions and issues which are of vital concern to you people. Not as he is, but rather as he would like you people to believe him to be, he presented himself. And I must concede he did do a masterful job. In fact, he sounded like a veteran Shakespearean actor reading lines that had no meaning for him, except how well they sounded to an audience to whom he was appealing for an applause. Justifiably, perhaps, many of my friends have wondered why I am directing attention to the inconsistency of my opponent's words and actions during this campaign. They wonder why I have referred to the undesirable political reputation he has acquired in his questionable political past. I say questionable because it is a kindlier word than disreputable. You people are only reasonable in wondering about these things, and you are rightfully entitled to a frank explanation. May I appeal to you for your close attention while I explain? During this campaign, you have never heard my opponent refer to me as anything except a nice young man. In no way has he referred to my reputation or to my record. In fact, I might say he studiously has tried to avoid opening up this issue and thereby inviting a comparison which he realizes could not and would not be in his favor. Only too well he recognizes that his record in public life and during the only time he ever was entrusted with public office, which was the appointed office of Hibbing Village Attorney in 1933, he recognizes that record cannot stand the searchlight of public scrutiny. Perhaps some of you listeners feel that I should respect his wishes and that I am not holding true to discussion of the really vital issues in this campaign when I invite such a searching comparison of the public life and background of civic activity of John Blotnick with the life and record of my opponent. If it were not for the fact that my opponent is two-timing me in this campaign, which is not so important after all, and if it were not for my conviction that he will betray the confidence of the voters if he is elected, which is of much more far-reaching importance, if it were not for these, because we the people on the race find ourselves in our present distressing condition because we have been betrayed in the past and by better lawyers than my opponents, it is because of these, I repeat, if it were not for these facts, I would not give the warning I want to leave with you. Consider this carefully. I am not striking at my opponents without provocation. During this campaign, I have been the victim of ruthless rumors circulated by my opponent's campaign workers, and I cannot help but feel that they are his brainchild. Such whisperings are difficult to answer. Only a few days ago, I was in the Hibbing Memorial Building at a rally when one of these workers approached me, and in the course of our conversation on the subject, he said, quote, in every way you can. For example, you've whispered to conservatives that I am a radical, and to liberals you have said that I'm not as liberal as they think. This is only one example of the kind of campaign you fellows are conducting, I said at that time. The one thought I would like to impress upon you tonight is this, that even while my opponent is trying to make you believe he is conducting a clean campaign, his second lieutenants are smearing me in every way they can with malicious whisperings. There is not one phase of my life I am not willing to subject to your most searching inquiry relative to my qualifications, my character, and my training to serve you capably and honorably as your state senator. The truth is, I will welcome such a personal investigation upon which to rest your confidence in John Blotnick before you vote for him next Tuesday, because it will give you the most effective answer to silence the many false rumors you may have heard. If only I could know each of you as well as I would like to have you know me, there would be no need of me rising to defend myself against slanderous whisperings. I would have your unquestioned trust and confidence because you would know me to be deserving. 2 weeks ago, in my first radio talk, I summarized our distressing situation on the Iron Range. I follow this with an outline of my educational background, my life on the range as a resident for 29 years, my experience with the major problems of the range, and my work to date toward the solution of these problems and my program for the future. Last week I called attention to the fact that my opponent's name has been inseparably connected with the period of spending of public tax money criticized in reports of state examiners. I mentioned that my opponent never had been able to defend himself successfully against many of the charges and accusations during the 7 years he vainly tried to talk himself back into the confidence of the majority of voters after he was removed as village attorney. In every one of these years, he either sought elective office personally or else he tried to be the mouthpiece on his elective office. Never win the confidence of the voters in his own hometown because they know him for what he is, and they will not be deceived by that eloquent voice, and they are still waiting vainly for him to answer satisfactorily for the misdeeds with which he has been fined. My review of these facts is not a personal one, and it is important for one reason only, but that reason is a vitally important one. Seriously, I ask you to stop for a moment and ask yourself this question. If my opponent cannot defend himself capably enough to clear his reputation in the minds of his own hidden people, in his own hometown, how can he possibly hope to defend himself when the state legislature considers the question of per capita tax reduction in 1941? I urge you to ask yourself this question, because in my mind, it is the most vital question for you to answer when you vote a week from today. Just as surely as I stand here now, just so surely will Southern Minnesota legislators attack him as a shining example of the kind of men who have been responsible for the lack of consideration of public welfare in the expenditure of public tax money during our past. They will hang him up high and dry and then point to him as they say to us, and I quote, "You are trying to convince us that you have clean house in your local government, and yet you dare to send a man like that to plead your case here in St. Paul. To us, you are trying to tell a good bedtime story, and we are too tired to listen. You have been getting by with a lot of things for a long time up there on the range, and it appears you still have not learned how to handle your own affairs, or you would not tag along on the coattails of the same old professional politicians." I suggest this as a type of comment which we may expect. What they will do then, these Southern Minnesota legislators, who unquestionably are looking for just some such excuse to justify their action in reducing our per capita tax revenues on the range, leaves little room for imagination. That is why I am asking you to consider carefully my opponent's political background before you cast your vote for state senator. Perhaps you may be one of those who will accuse me of trying to climb into public office over the broken bones of my opponent. If so, my only answer is that I far rather would do this and be thus accused than to remain silent and possibly let that opponent have to step out of public office over the broken bones of the people. Knowing his background much more intimately than I consider it proper to present in this campaign, I cannot help but feel that we the people will have to pay the penalty for his past political mistakes if we elect him our state senator. For this reason, and for this reason only, I have referred to my opponent's past record with the hope that possibly he might be able to clear up the shadows that blemish it. Thus far, I have offered you nothing constructive this evening, and you may be inclined to feel I have no particular qualifications nor any definite program to reclaim this range territory. That is not the case. In every way, I feel I am better qualified than my opponent to serve the range during the difficult days that lie ahead. As I said before, I was born on the range and have lived here all my life. After teaching 1 year in a one-room school in the northern part of our county, I worked my way through Winona State Teachers College and then continued my education at the University of Minnesota and the University of Chicago. I worked for 2 years as educational advisor in CCC camps in the Superior National Forest. And then I taught chemistry for 2 years in at Chisholm High School, and this I resigned to accept my present job in the research and administrative division of the St. Louis County Rural Schools. My background includes almost 14 years of Boy Scout activity, and I find that I was the second Eagle Scout in Chisholm. And my experience in Minnesota as one phase of our rehabilitation program when I was an official representative of St. Louis County attending the Joint Committee on Forestry hearings which were held in Madison, Wisconsin. In this connection, the report we submitted was commended by such men on that committee as Senator John H. Bankett of Alabama and Senator Charles McNary of Oregon and Representative Reed of New York. Last summer, I testified before three Minnesota Legislative Interim Committees, and I presided at the Youth Interim Committee conference which was held at Hibbing. Testifying as one of the youngest men called before the River Parity Interim Tax Committee, I was commended by both Senator Deese and Senator Miller, the late chairman of that commission, and by Representative Dawn for my presentation of facts in defense of the ranch. A week later, as chairman of the St. Louis County Committee on Forestry, I presented the major report before the Legislative Interim Committee on Forestry, which met in Duluth. Lest this review of my record be misconstrued, I urge you to consider it in an impersonal and an objective manner, only as support for the statement that I believe I am fully as well qualified as my opponent to help you work out your problems on the range. I also would like you to recognize that my qualifications and my work on this program were recognized by state and national agencies long before I became a candidate for state senator. Then I would appreciate it if you would ask my opponent to review his record in this field of work. In fact, I would go so far as to suggest that you ask him to point out to just one contribution he has made to the civic progress of either his hometown of Hibbing or the range. And I ask you to do this when you make your concluding radio talk next Monday evening. All I ask is an element of fairness that you compare my record of proved performance, not as an elected official, but merely as a private citizen, with my opponent's rather optimistic boasting about what he will do if he is elected. If you will do this, I will be satisfied with your decision. This is no time for idle statements. We have heard a lot of fancy talk from lawyer politicians for many years, and the time has come for action. We the people, you and I, are going to act. We are going to work together in complete harmony because we have a fundamental community of interest. We can build a better future than that which appears to be in store for us. We are going to begin now to build that better future. We are going to work together to keep our mining industry here for the next 200 or 300 years by demanding that the state legislature make adequate appropriations for experimental research into low-cost methods for processing our tremendous deposits of second-grade ore. We are going to ask the legislature to revise the system of taxation of underground mining to give impetus to underground operations, because underground mining employs 6 to 8 times as men for every ton of ore moved as compared to open-pit methods. We are going to ask for state and federal appropriations to help us restore our forest wealth and rebuild our timber industries, thus providing immediate cities and other towns and forest areas to acquire and develop their own community forests. And we are going to demand that reforestation be conducted on a gigantic scale. We, you and I, are going to advocate that the legislature pass measures for stimulation of building trades through a program of low-cost housing. And we are going to work for an expanded program of vocational training of our youth, so that they will be trained for better jobs. We, you and I, are going to get together on our problems, and fighting as determined people, we are going to lick these problems, moving forward step by step, perhaps slowly at times towards a more secure future and toward a more fundamental defense of the democracy of this nation. And Mayor LaGuardia of New York City expressed my feelings when he said, and I quote, in concluding, "Give us this day our daily bread," is not a figure of speech. What some of us are trying to do is to answer that call in his name as he would have us do. That, my friends, is why the fight is still on. Christ knew that the symbol of the cross on which he died would be an everlasting reminder to the entire world that the people of the world should have their daily bread. End of quote. This is John Blotman, your candidate for state senator, saying thank you and good night.
You have read a paid political address of Mr. John Blotman, the candidate for the office of state senator. This is WMSG in Hibbing. At this time, we join the Arrowhead Broadcasting System for a political talk already in progress, sponsored by the Roosevelt Wallace Volunteer Committee.
Oh, Nellie, 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 Nellie